Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, if somebody punches you below the belt, do you get a free shot back? What does the NFL have to say about that scuffle at the end of Monday Night Football? Plus, Jory Epstein is writing about both Saquon Barkley and the Cowboys, what we learned from last week's stunning Dallas comeback. Frank Schwab has playoff bracket projections. I'm thankful for both of them. Inside Coverage is next. For the record, apple pie is the best Thanksgiving pie. Welcome to another edition of Inside Coverage, the how and the why, any and everything you need to know not only about the National Football League as we head to Thanksgiving and to Week 13, but also about what NFL players do and don't like on their Thanksgiving table. Coming up, Tet McMillan. Maybe I'll ask him. Or maybe I'll ask T-Mac, don't call him Tet, we'll call him Tet Arroa, that's his real name, what he thinks of his teammate, Trayvon Merrick, getting suspended this afternoon for punching Juwan Jennings last night. It was, how would I describe that punch? You know what, remember Charles Tillman, Frank Schwab, and Jory Epstein? Wow. Remember the peanut punch? That's what that was last night. Just,
where are we going with this?
Yeah, that's what that was last night at the end of a resounding 49ers victory, 20-9 over the Carolina Panthers to wrap up Week 12. Hello, friends. Happy Thanksgiving early to you and yours. Good to have you back, Jory. We had Frank yesterday. Well, thank you for brightening up our day.
You know, happy to be here. Happy to be with you. I'm coming from Dallas, where it is quite bright and sunny. So Dallas is brightening my day as I brighten y'all's.
Okay, well, it's like 60 degrees here in Los Angeles after a scary 48-degree morning. So I'm happy for the sunshine. Frank, what's it like in Denver?
It's beautiful. We have not even gotten snow yet. It is in the 40s, I think. You haven't gone soft, Andrew, have you? Are you one of those LA guys who's like, oh my God, it's 50 degrees and I got to freak out?
No. When I say that like it's 48 and the people are frightened, I'm just talking about my neighbors here.
Talking about them, not you. Okay, got it.
Yes, no, we're good.
I'd be worried about you.
I got up in Vegas on Sunday morning and I worked out in 48 degrees. I was okay. I wasn't going to go to the cushy gym at the hotel. I went outside. You can let that crisp air fill your lungs. It might be snowing Saturday evening in Cleveland before the Browns and the 49ers head-to-head on Sunday, in which it might be now rain. But no, I can handle it. We're tough. Yeah. All right. You guys want to do Monday Night Football first?
Well, do we have to?
Let's do it.
Okay, no, we're going to do it. Because here's the setup for that game. This was Carolina's chance. This was the Panthers' chance on a big stage to not only jump into first, take over first in the NFC West, but in their first Monday Night appearance in over 2 years, the last time they were on Monday Night was Bryce Young's Week 2 as a rookie. They had a chance to jump in and say, ta-da, look at us. We're a playoff team. We're a team that had an historically bad defense a year ago, but we figured it out. We're running the football. We have Tet Arroa McMillan, who joins Inside Coverage later. That would have been on the billboard. And we are here. We are beating up the banged up 49ers. And instead, they didn't. In a game that was back and forth with pick after pick, and Brock Purdy threw three of them in the first half. Not all three, but you know what I'm saying. Like, actually, they were all three in the first half. The Panthers kind of wilted, and they fall 20-9. My big takeaway from this is not only is Carolina not necessarily ready for primetime, but they do get the Bucs twice in the last month. They could still very much win what is clearly the worst of the eight divisions in the NFL. It's that Christian McCaffrey needs to be in the MVP conversation. But Jory, I'm kind of concerned about how much he is being used. He had 31 touches last night. He's at 298. He's on pace for 422 touches, which would be the 21st highest total of all time. It would be the most since, speaking of Dallas, DeMarco Murray had 449 in 2014 when he won the rushing title. And it would only be the third time in the last decade that a player went over 400 touches. For a guy that's had injury concerns, Kyle Shanahan sure isn't concerned. He's running him into the ground.
Right, and I think we saw Philadelphia have success doing this with Saquon Barkley last year, the same way Christian McCaffrey is leading the league right now in touches and yards from scrimmage. Saquon did that last year, and we'll get to him more later in the show, but I think my question would be, are you concerned about this year for Christian McCaffrey, or are you concerned about the impact for next year? Because I think whether or not there's an impact this year, it does impact guys down the road. Now, you also have had so many injuries on both sides of the ball for the San Francisco 49ers that do you have the luxury to be like, hey, Christian, we're going to rest you? I don't know. There's a lot of guys who aren't able to play at all right now.
I do have to wonder about, I have had this thought that maybe the 49ers don't plan to have McCaffrey back next year. Because why else would you use him like this? This is crazy. Hmm. Like, this is Kyle Shanahan saying, get the gas tank down to E. Like, they do have a competent backup. Brian Robinson Jr. is out of nobody. Like, they could give
him more
carries.
He's actually looked really good the last month when they've thrown him in there.
And yes, some of this was born out of, we got nobody else, Christian. Like, George Kittle's out, Juwan Jennings is out, Ricky Pearsall's out. You've got to carry the load. That wasn't the case last night. They're relatively healthy. And still, Christian McCaffrey had 9 touches on the first drive, kind of set the tone. I don't know that you use a 29-year-old running back like this if you plan to have anything left with him in his 30-year-old season. So, but that's a topic for another day. I do want to give just a ton of credit to Christian McCaffrey. We think of like the guys getting 400 touches as Derrick Henry or even Saquon Barkley is a really big dude. Christian McCaffrey's not a big dude, but he is tough. He is strong. He welcomes this. He wants the ball. He wants the work. He's had Iron Man seasons before where he's had the old school playing 96% of the running back snaps. I respect everything he's doing. He's a heck of a player. Like you said, if you want to talk about him being in the MVP conversation, I don't think he's got a shot to win it, but I understand where you're coming from. He's absolutely carrying that team. To me, he's a first ballot walk-in Hall of Famer, and he's showing that this year. This has been a tremendous season for Christian McCaffrey. But yeah, seeing what Saquon Barkley's doing this year after 482 touches last year, I do wonder what's Christian McCaffrey going to look like next year after all this workload? Ooh.
We're going to get to Saquon because Jory has a great piece on Saquon that's right now on Yahoo's NFL page. We'll get to him coming up in a couple of seconds. But one of the guys, I said only the third time if he gets to 400, over 400 for any back in the last decade. One of them was McCaffrey in 2019 when he was a much younger man, when he had 403. Le'Veon Bell in 2017 with the Steelers had 406. What is bonkers here is that McCaffrey leads the NFL. Now, they've played one extra game. They haven't had their bye yet. He leads the NFL with 81 receptions, and he leads the NFL with 212 rushing attempts. That's you saw insane. Marcus Allen there before the game last night. I'm sorry, Roger Craig, not Marcus Allen. You saw Roger Craig on the field, and you saw that great moment. Obviously, he remembers Christian McCaffrey, and he was just a little kid, and Craig was playing with his dad, Ed, who's one of my favorite people. And there is also, I think you have to probably consider the revenge fact, not revenge, the idea that he was playing his former team last night. Like, I don't know if anyone saw the George Kittle interview after the game with our friend Omar Ruiz from NFL Network. And Omar pointed out, hey, you had a great game, but, you know, Christian McCaffrey did X, Y, and Z. And Kittle goes, oh, really? You know, because he's a ham. Oh, really? Well, he was playing his old team. And maybe that's why he got every touch seemingly on that opening drive. I had not thought of him, Jory, about an MVP until last night. Maybe that's on me. And as I get ready, though, for the Niners coming to Cleveland to face the Browns and do a deeper dive, I mean, their entire defense is out. Ricky Pearsall's been out. Brandon Ayuk hasn't played yet. At all. You had a quarterback switch, yet through it all, the consistent part is Christian McCaffrey.
Right. And I think in terms of you talking about, okay, well, who's going to get MVP? I don't even think he's yet the best player at his position. I mean, if you look at rushing in particular, as you mentioned, the 49ers have played an extra game, but for rushing yards per game and rushing touchdowns, Jonathan Taylor's still first in both of those categories and continues to have that. So I think what Christian McCaffrey's doing is extremely impressive and should get him, whether a first team all pro or second team all pro, I guess, for his performance, but it's not quite Jonathan Taylor. And so I think when you take what Jonathan Taylor's doing, how surprising the Colts have been, and the fact that they're not quite as injured, I think that's probably why we're talking more about Jonathan Taylor than Christian McCaffrey. It's also, it's not newer in the sense that we didn't know what JT could do, but it is newer in the sense of him doing it to this degree this year and having that kind of impact on the record.
All right, let's talk about Robert Saleh, because that, go ahead.
No, I just want to point out that, there's a couple guys in line ahead of McCaffrey. I think Jahmyr Gibbs might have a better MVP argument. Not that he really has one, but Jahmyr Gibbs has been awesome. JSN, we talked about him going over 2,000 yards on pace too, so he deserves that. But this is, I like this because, I like football history. I spend a lot of my time when I'm writing for Yahoo Sports, have old games on YouTube. And I remember one in specific, I was binging the 85 Bears season, the full broadcast. And Walter Payton came out for like two plays and the announcers were like apoplectic. They're like, oh my God, what's wrong with Walter? We're going to have get the sideline reporter down to see what's wrong. We don't see that anymore. It's committees and load management and timeshares. And even these guys are getting 60% of the running back carries. So I think it's awesome to see Christian McCaffrey being like, no, give me the ball as much as you want. I can handle it. I just have so much respect for Christian McCaffrey just as a player overall. He's been so much fun to watch in his career. I believe one of the top 15 running backs of all time. I think he's in that conversation.
Oh, wow.
I mean, not many guys have brought the overall skill set to the game that he has brought, including durability.
Did you guys see the announcement of the 85 Bears NFL Films thing that's coming out? Anybody?
Oh, wow. We're talking about the 85 Bears again. Shocking.
Well, they're going to. Yeah. I mean, of course, nothing's been done about the 85 Bears. It's not even an iconic SNL bit. No. No one is. But it'll be cool. I think it'll be cool. I don't know if they're going to include the part where I came home to my Chicago apartment once and Dennis McKinnon was sitting on my couch for no reason. Like, I have no idea. It was like out of a David Lynch movie. Like, why is he on my couch?
Create a film without that?
Yeah, right. Did Willie Gault?
Yeah, we'll probably save that. We'll save that for another time. But let's get to Robert Saleh. So, Jorah, you threw this one in the chat. And look, his defense is playing well. They're top 10, top 15, really, by most metrics. But they're doing it without Bosa, without Fred Warner, and without their first-round pick, Mykal Williams, as well, just to name a few. I mean, those are the big, above-the-line, top-of-the-marquee injuries. They're notable, and they would kill any team here losing those guys. But you threw this in the chat about Robert Saleh potentially getting some run in the next head coaching cycle, even though he was 20-36 as head coach of the Jets and had double-digit losses in all three of his full seasons. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a couple parts here, which is, are the Jets better since they lost Robert Saleh, and are the 49ers better since they gained Robert Saleh? And on both fronts, the answer is Robert Saleh is coming out ahead. And so I would say when you look at the Jets, no, they didn't have a great record during his time, but their defense was really impressive during his time. And they were almost like doing better than his Jets standard based off that culture. I think we saw how they spiraled when they fired him last year. This year, the Jets are 2-9. So it's not like, okay, I get that they're in a rebuild, but it's not like you get rid of Robert Saleh and all of a sudden you figure it out. And then for me, the 49ers, as you mentioned, they've got all these defensive stars injured. Last night, we're watching the broadcast and it's like, oh, look, it's Fred Warner in a suite watching the game. And it's Nick Bosa in a suite watching the game. And then this defense is still picking off Bryce Young and getting these stops. And I just think that for the defense to be performing the way they are, we kept thinking, oh, I guess the 49ers aren't going to the playoffs because how are they going to do it without so many of their best players, including season-ending injuries to the defensive players, not specifically like 3-4 games. Like, these guys are out for the long haul. And somehow, despite who's on the field, they keep finding a way. So I take that. And I also just think, like, look how much fun Robert Saleh is having and look at the performance he is allowing that defense to do. And if I am another team, I at least want to talk to him. I don't know if he's going to be there yet. Maybe he has another great year with the Niners after, and then he goes back to it. But I think that, I mean, I'm laughing because when I was at the Cowboys game the other night, Quinnen Williams had a quote about how Jerry Jones is one of the best owners he's played for. And there's a lot of laughter on Twitter of like, oh, after coming from Woody Johnson, Someone else is actually one of the best owners, and there's a very diplomatic way to say it, but I think so too. Robert Saleh, it's like, well, Jed York is one of the best owners that Robert Saleh has worked for in the past couple of years. And I think that there is some degree of, look how many quarterbacks and coaches and players across the board are better when they leave the Jets, that I don't know that it has to be like the final straw for Robert Saleh.
I think Saleh would be a great hire. I really do. And I've said it since he left the Jets that I think part of it too, I don't look at his record as the Jets as a negative. I look at it as his time with the Jets. If you can survive that, you can survive anything. You can, if you work for Woody Johnson, your next job is going to be easier. It just has to be. So he has had those reps in the worst situation you could possibly have as an NFL head coach, and still comes out, is having a great season with the San Francisco 49ers. But you do the numbers game real quick, and I was trying to think of this the other day, like how many openings are there really going to be? And I landed on like six, seven. And it was, okay, stop so it. You have Please. So many good defensive coordinators right now. I think Jesse Minter of the Chargers is in the mix here. Jeff Hafley of the Packers, I think, is going to get a lot of looks. I think Chris Shula of the Rams, coming from the McVay tree, I think he gets some looks. Brian Flores is a little complicated, but he's still there too. Those are five defensive coordinators right there in an NFL that wants to hire offensive head coaches. But we'll see. I would have, if somebody hired Robert Saleh, if the Giants or the Titans or whoever hire Robert Saleh.
The Giants would be amazing bringing back to New York.
So funny. That'd be the funniest thing. I'd put my stamp of approval on it because I think Robert Saleh is going to be really, really good in his second head coaching job.
Yeah, I think he's going to get more interviews, certainly, or an interview or two, certainly, in this coming cycle. I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody after the show, somebody who has a pretty good finger on the pulse of the upcoming coaching cycle. And we both agreed, like, there's no huge home run name. There isn't a Ben Johnson, and this isn't breaking news here. We've all discussed this, but no one knows what's going to happen. And there could be openings out of nowhere. Like, what happens in Buffalo if things really go south? Does anyone know? I mean, is there change for the sake of change there? I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying someone's on the hot seat. We're just throwing it out there. There's always a surprise. At the same time, this year, there are going to be multiple surprise hires. Like, ooh, okay. Well, that might be a reach. Is it a reach? Not this year. It isn't a reach. Whomever. Because there just isn't that one name that everyone is going to be fighting over. So Robert Saleh, yeah, is going to be in the mix. I want to get a quick thought here from both of you on the suspension late in the afternoon. Not for Juwan Jennings, who so clearly threw an open-handed punch, strike, whatever, to the helmet of Panthers safety Trevon Merrig after the game. Everybody saw. But then everyone saw as well the slow-mo video of Merrig hitting Juwan Jennings below the belt. There's really no other way to say it. He got a clean shot right below the belt. And Jennings has not been suspended. Merrig has been suspended. Remember when Juju Smith-Schuster might have gotten a cheap shot in on Brian Branch, but it was Branch who got suspended because he was the one that openly, with the cameras right there, struck Juju in the helmet after the game. This is the other way around. This is, oh, no. It's okay you hit him in the head because he hit you down there. So, Frank, this is an interesting precedent. Hitting someone below the belt, same as spitting, it's pretty disrespectful, and that's going to get you suspended. It should. But the guy that retaliated after the game, dead ball after a, you got me in the, you know, that guy's okay.
I promise you, Brian Branch took note of this, right? Like, he was probably wait a second. But I fully agree with this. Look, when you saw the second replay of Merrig, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Is it Morrig? Merrig? Whatever.
Trevon.
We'll go with Trevon. When you saw the replay, you're like, oh, yeah, that's just, there's no place in the game for that. The NFL is trying to push, you know, sportsmanship and all that kind of stuff. No taunting. Well, that's not a good look for the league. And they got the right guy here. And
Jennings shouldn't be suspended?
I don't
because
know.
Because, like, on the playground as kids, sometimes we would say, hey, free shot. Free shot. You get a free shot. So Jennings gets a free shot.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, actually.
Do you not remember totally a week ago when Mike Tomlin said, right. Hey, they were like, oh, do you have any words for Jalen Ramsey and how to retaliate when someone spit on you? And he said, essentially, like, I'm not going to have a message on that. Do what comes natural. So I think for Juwan Jennings, it's do what comes natural. And if anything, like he kind of showed restraint waiting till after the games that he didn't blow it for his team. I know that sounds insane, but I think that first of all, kudos to ESPN for having that footage from earlier in the game and being able to put that next to us. So all of us were able to say, okay, wait, what's happening? No, now we have the context, because one of the issues in the Steelers Bengals game was that we didn't have the context in real time. And by we, I mean, the officials really didn't have the context in real time of, oh, there was a punch before in like with the spit. And so someone did get ejected for a short period of time. But I think that the NFL's message here is, hey, you can't do that. And if you're going to do that, then we're not going to protect you from the consequences for someone else.
And by the way, just like I gave props to Tomlin for what his reaction, I'll give props to Kyle Shanahan too. Shanahan came out after the game and basically said, somebody asked him, are you mad at Jennings for getting in a fight? And he's like, no, did you see he got a cheap shot below the belt? Like, whatever you want to do. And I think that hey, look, you can't just let guys spit on you or punch you under the below the belt and nothing happened. So I'm fine with Juwan Jennings not getting anything here. Like, he was provoked and he retaliated. And I really have no issue with him getting no punishment whatsoever.
Here's what Kyle said. And sorry, Madison, if you have to bleep this. He said he got hit in the balls and I'm proud of him for keeping his cool. That's what he said.
Yeah, he didn't get a 15-yard penalty during the game. He waited. Nope. And it's funny.
And
he's walking up to
him
like
under the belt.
No, yeah.
Like the relative severity. He's like, no, just a little slap in the face. He's got a helmet on. It's fine.
Oh, boy. Okay, so with that in mind, perfect transition now to a guy who's a teammate of Trayvon Merrick, but is here for, you know, bigger purpose, obviously. It's my cause, my cleats time. So we are very thrilled to be joined by the rookie wide receiver, the Carolina Panthers. All right, this is kind of cool. Joining us now, one of the front runners for Rookie of the Year, one of the best, not only rookies in the NFL this year, but you could argue he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL this year. On Inside Coverage on Yahoo from the Carolina Panthers, Tedaro McMillan. How the heck are you, man?
I'm good. And you?
I'm okay. Let's, Tedaro, get yesterday out of the way here. Big stage. You guys had this huge chance, the Panthers in San Francisco, to kind of plant your flag and kind of announce to the world on a national TV audience that you guys are legit. You're still very much in the playoff race. Clearly, obviously, you didn't take over first. But as you head home, what'd you learn about yourselves last night?
We just got to capitalize, especially offensively. You know, we had 3 points off of three turnovers, which is, I mean, that's a bad recipe for football. So we just got to capitalize on those moments. And, you know, whenever the defense gives us good field position, we got to learn how to score points. And, you know, obviously 9 points is not going to cut it. So, offensively, we just got to be a lot better.
Bryce said, I'm going to read the quote here. Bryce said, quote, it's going to be a sucky plane ride home. How is the plane ride home?
Long travels after a loss is not a fun one.
You guys have a nice plane. It's not as if everyone flying home for Thanksgiving sitting in like 35D in the back of a plane. But to play a Monday night game in San Francisco, in California, you're from California, you've taken a red eye once or twice. To play it in California and then have to fly back to Carolina and then have to get up and turn around on a holiday week and play 6 days later. Dude, that's not easy.
I mean, shoot, it's my first time ever experiencing this, so we'll see how it goes.
But at the same time, you get your hometown Rams coming to town. Were you one of those Orange County Rams fans as a kid? Did you care?
No, I wasn't.
What does it mean, though, to have the number one seed in the NFC come to town? Because, well, this is a 1 o'clock game and not the Monday night game. The missed opportunity you guys had on Monday night, you very much have a chance to correct that this week.
Not for sure. Just obviously playing against the number one seed is a blessing. Back at home in Bank of America Stadium, and, you know, just give us a chance to bounce back off this Monday night game and, you know, hopefully take the lead in the division.
What has Dave Canales told you about what Thanksgiving and December and everything that you guys have in front of you means? I mean, you still get the Buccaneers twice, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody knows that, you know, we have the hardest schedule, I think, from here on out in the league. So, you know, we really gonna have to buckle up and be consistent and try to win as many games as we can and, you know, try to get to the playoffs.
All right. Finally, last thing on last night, I promise. I don't know if you saw this. It just came down literally as we sit here recording this about 10 minutes ago. Trayvon Merrick has been suspended for a game for that punch below the belt. What do you think?
Oof. I mean, you know, obviously it's going to hurt us, him being one of our key players. But, you know, I think it's just a good opportunity for somebody to step up and you know, make a play.
Shouldn't both guys get suspended?
Man, I got no comment on that one. You know, the league gonna do what the league do. So, you know, I'm just a rookie that has no say anyway.
I was gonna say that is a veteran move right there. Well done. You're a rookie, but that is a veteran move. That is a veteran no comment, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right, final thing, I promise. On Thanksgiving, I'm guessing, you know, Thanksgiving away from home. Are your folks coming, family coming, anyone coming?
Yeah, I got a few family coming.
Okay, cool. What is your favorite Thanksgiving food and your least favorite Thanksgiving food?
Do pumpkin pie count?
Okay.
That's my favorite. And okay. Then my favorite? Oh, no, that's a lot of them. I'm not really a big fan of Thanksgiving food. Maybe like, I don't even know. I don't really like too many Thanksgiving food.
Like cranberry sauce, no. Stuff's nasty.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's trash.
Yeah, hate it. Are you a stuffing inside the bird or outside the bird guy?
I don't like stuffing.
You don't like stuffing? Really?
Yeah.
What happened? No? Do you not like turkey?
No, I barely like turkey.
Mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
Okay. Any kind of potato?
Pumpkin pie. So,
pumpkin pie, that's it. I'm an apple pie guy. We always have two.
Okay, I like that too. I can respect that.
Hold on. Isn't like the T-Mac, right? Like, or the T-Rex. I keep thinking T-Rex. You're T-Mac. Like the T-Rex ate everything, but the T-Mac doesn't eat everything?
No, I definitely don't eat everything.
Okay. Well, happy Thanksgiving regardless, man. Good work with your My Cause, My Cleats and everything you're doing with Sharpie. And congratulations on a great start to your first season. And not only you, but the Panthers as well. And good luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate you, Andrew. Take care.
Thanks, man. All right, thanks to Teteroa McMillan. Don't call him Tet. Teteroa McMillan, the rookie wide receiver of the Carolina Panthers. They get a big one this week against, for my money, the number one team of the NFL, the Los Angeles Rams, who are now the number one seed in the NFC, ahead, Jorian Frank, of the Philadelphia Eagles, who have a mildly significant game on Black Friday on Prime Video on Amazon against the Chicago Bears. All right, let's talk about the Eagles. However, they're coming off a loss. We know that. Jor, you're writing about it right now on Yahoo's NFL page. Great stuff. And you're trying to answer the question, and these are your words here. Is this a matter of Barkley's opportunities or his production? Talking about Saquon, who had 2,000 yards last year, and obviously the entire Eagles offense has taken a step backwards, and they're under the spotlight, under the microscope. A.J. Brown, I thought this was different or interesting. He said, teams have been playing us different this year. We know that, and we expected that. But with that in mind, when it comes to Saquon, let's try to answer the question that you posed. Is it opportunities or is it production?
Yeah, I think it's an important question because it's easy to say, oh, Saquon's not having the same success because he's not able to do it. But what opportunities is he getting? And so I kind of started looking at the numbers and I found that in each of the Eagles' 8 wins this season, Saquon has received at least 14 carries and at least 18 touches. In each of their 3 losses, 12 or fewer carries and 17 or fewer touches. So his fewest carry games, his fewest touches games, which of course the difference in those is the times he gets involved in the passing game, even if it's somewhat manufactured run game, are their losses. And so it wasn't that there was a correlation, a strict correlation, at least between how many yards he was rushing for or gaining and whether or not they won, but there was an exact correlation between how many times he was touching the ball. And then you say, okay, well, is there this idea that, well, if you're up more, you're going to run the ball more? And so it's a little bit of a skewed data point. And so I went and said only his first half numbers, and still it bore out that two of their losses were two of his three fewest first half touches. And so there's kind of that front. And I also think it's just worth noting that when you look at these numbers, to me, this is not only is Saquon getting progress towards a touchdown, is he getting the yardage? This is a question of, are you wearing down the other defense with physicality? Are you bleeding the clock to keep your defense fresh? And so I understand that Saquon might not be as explosive, and perhaps if he's less explosive, then you say, well, we don't want to give him those opportunities. But I think this data shows that whether or not he's 100% explosive, the opportunities are correlating with winning. And even though correlation does not always equal causation, I do think that means that there's a very clear direction in terms of what the Eagles should do. Frank, what do you think?
It's so tough because he's not the same player this year. It's just, he is, like you said, percentage-wise of like percentage of running back carries and target percentage, it's roughly the same as last year. He's just not doing as much with it. And we try to find all the other excuses of, oh, maybe there's an injury, the offensive line, the offensive play calling. But really, there was a million think pieces this summer about 482 touches in a season, what that does to a guy. We just talked about Christian McCaffrey with that. I just think you're seeing right. The effects of that. A, I'll spit it back on you, Joey, because A, I want to ask you if you think that's legit. And B, I've always wrestled with this of how much responsibility does a coaching staff have to not give a guy 482 touches in a year? Is there any? Or is it just, hey, we're paying you. If we want to give you the ball 500 times, we're going to give you the ball 500 times. Because this does cut down guys' careers. Like, we've seen it over and over, especially at the running back position. Really no other position, but running back especially, where you overload a guy too much, his earning power later in his career, the length of his career, the effectiveness in his late 20s, early 30s really gets affected. So, A, do you think it's the touches that have caught up to him? And B, did Eagles do anything wrong here? Like, does he justify the means with the Super Bowl last year?
I do believe the touches are impacting Saquon's production, and I'm also not super convinced both of his knees are in tip-top shape. I'm not saying the Eagles are being I'm not saying they're hiding anything on the injury report or doing something unclear, but look, like, guys are dealing with nicks and bruises all the time, and if they're not going to impact your safety in playing the game, but they might impact your functionality, you can often slide under the radar, and I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing that with Saquon. I don't have direct knowledge of that, but I do think based off his history and based off what we're seeing, it shouldn't be surprising. In terms of whether the Eagles should have responsibility on this, I think, first of all, players will tell you that teams are not going to protect them. The players have to protect themselves. If anything, Nick Sirianni did keep Saquon from playing in that last regular season game last year, despite the fact that he could have gone for the rushing record. He was over 2,000. Nick let him stay until then. But I think they did protect him a bit from himself. And if you told Saquon last year, hey, either you could potentially play three more years in the league or you could win a Super Bowl, hands down, I don't think he would have hesitated for a second, because after all of those years on the Giants, obviously every team wants to win a Super Bowl, but Saquon went through so much losing and he got to experience the other end of it. To me, though, I still think even if he's not 100%, the impact Saquon has on defenses in a sort of like subconscious, not subconscious way, but the indirect impact to me is the reason they should keep running him, even if his direct impact is not as effective anymore.
You know, there are so many layers here. And again, we always fall back, and it's my crutch, I admit. The both can be true. This isn't both can be true. This is like 10 things at once can be true. So first of all, the 482 that we're throwing out here, that includes the playoff run. The numbers I had were regular season numbers. And then obviously the Eagles rode Saquon all the way to that Lombardi Trophy in New Orleans. So number one, he had nearly 500 touches. Number two, defenses spent an entire offseason, coaches and coordinators, an entire offseason in the lab, how to slow down these Eagles. Number three, the lack of creativity with play calling. A.J. Brown's complaining. The offense is run, pass, and pass is usually a slant or a go ball. Can A.J. or Devontae Smith beat their guy in a one-on-one? So other teams kind of know what's coming. Number four, there's been offensive line injuries, whether it's Landon Dickerson or now Lane Johnson. That takes a toll. number five, yet Saquon may not be the same guy he was a year ago, because this sounds cold and callous, but running backs are kind of like cars. And that's how NFL teams and coaches view them. There are only so many miles on your car. And the more and more miles you rack up on your car, the less and less effective your car is. Same with tires. Hey, how many miles are on these tires? How much tread is left on these tires? And yeah, after 482, Saquon or any other running back, historically, Frank is absolutely right, is going to be a different player. Now, as for the financial part of it, the Eagles did kind of give him a thank you gift last year. They did bump his contract up too, and it is creative accounting to make it look like a $20 million a year contract, at least on the APY. So they thanked him, right? They said, hey, you got the trophy, you got the ring. We would like to give you a cash bonus. They did that. But when you combine all of these factors, oh, by the way, the Eagles have still only lost three games. Yeah. It's kind of different. Jory, by the way, your piece is great because you're looking at it from all angles here. And you spoke to Saquon. You have the A.J. Brown quote in there. You have Sirianni in there. There's no screaming headline. Like, there's like some kind of malfeasance here, or Saquon has taken a massive step backwards. There are so many factors at play here.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting also because while each of these data points that we could say, like, they tell one story and there might be data points that tell a conflicting story, I even did look into offensive line rankings. And to me, I like ESPN's metrics, which include run block win rate, because I think PFF, while they are well-intended and they are somewhat reflective, they don't necessarily know all the assignments. And so ESPN has this run block win rate metric that really tells you how often the offensive linemen are winning their blocks. And last year, the Eagles won they won on run blocks 72% of the time, which was 10th. And this year it's 72% of the time, which is 11th. So I'm not saying game to game, they're not having down games. And obviously with Lane Johnson out, we know that their record drops significantly, not just on run blocking, but on winning games. But the data on that set shows that they're pretty much run blocking with the same degree of success.
You know what's funny here? Hold on, Frank. Hold on. Let me throw this one thing in here. Frank, sorry to cut you off. Is that I saw the same data, and the data is the data, right? The numbers tell a story. Orlovsky this afternoon, and I love the guy. Orlovsky this afternoon goes, this is an offensive line issue. Guys, it's an offensive line issue. So ESPN's data says that, and then one of their guys, who we all respect, goes, offensive line.
I thought the data would say something different. I went there going right to be like, okay, look, the offensive line is doing this, not just Saquon. And to the offensive line's credit, I mean, guys like Jordan, Saquon actually after the game was like, this is on me. I'm not into, oh, they're trying to defend me more. Oh, it's the run blocking. I believe it starts with me. It ends with me. It's my fault. And then left tackle Jordan Mailata was like, it's not on him. It's on us. It's up front. I mean, everyone's taking accountability. Nick Sirianni says it's on him. He's not blaming Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator. But the reality is, like, I think they just give him the ball five more times a game and see what happens. And oh, by the way, if you want a good time to start, the Bears, who you're playing on Friday, are bottom three, both in terms of rushing yards allowed per game and yards per carry allowed. So
that's exactly Frank. What I was going to point out, that if let's not close the door on Saquon quite yet, because starting with the Bears on Friday, they have a very friendly stretch of running defenses. And if Saquon Barkley's going to get going this season, it could still happen. This stretch they have coming up, he could be a big factor down the stretch, and they're still in play for the number one seed. They're still in play for another Super Bowl championship. But to get that, I think they have to get Saquon Barkley going. And I think these next few weeks, we're going to know either, Saquon caught a bit easier of a schedule, got going, and we saw the old Saquon, or, yeah, it just ain't happening this year. It's going to be one of the two. We're going to find out pretty quickly that way.
We are. We're also going to find out pretty quickly how the Cowboys are looking on a short week. Jory, you got two bylines here. By the way, Frank's got a great byline, too, about playoff projections. I forgot to tease that earlier.
We'll get there.
We're going to get to that coming up in a couple of minutes here. Frank, with his guaranteed, it's Thanksgiving. We're thankful and grateful for Frank's playoff projections. They are coming up shortly. But, Jory, let's get to the Cowboys, because they are playing on Thanksgiving, as they always are, a tradition truly unlike any other, Nance and Romo and Tracy in Dallas for a game which I made the prediction last week and Charles' head exploded, but I think he's coming around to it. See, Rob not here. We're talking about him, and he's not here. That this will be the most watched regular season game in decades, Like, it's going to get to $50 million because it's the Chiefs who saved their season with a fourth quarter comeback a week ago against the Colts, and the Cowboys who jury stunned the Eagles. And now Jerry and everyone is kind of like walking around with their chest out and feeling good.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really get quite that impression when I was at the game on Sunday. But I do think that this is a Cowboys team that statistically is not yet out of it. And I think their ability to beat the Eagles definitely gave them more confidence. Now, I think the reason you want to pump the brakes on that would be the Cowboys usually beat the Eagles at least once a year. I mean, Dak Prescott like hasn't lost a division opponent at home in years. He's 22-4 against, or 22-2, I believe it is, against division opponents at home. So he just understands the division really, really well, and he is able to win those games. Going against an uncommon opponent like the Chiefs on Thanksgiving or the Lions Thursday after, that's a different ballpark. But what I think, regardless of whether they ultimately end up making the playoffs, we should be looking at is, this is a Cowboys team that has retooled very quickly. I mean, I was not so against the Micah Parsons trade. I understood where it was coming from. It had kind of been behind the scenes an option for a long time. And then all of a sudden, the contract stuff got a little bit ugly and the Cowboys decided to make the move. But one of the reasons I liked what they've done since is when you take Kenny Clark, Oso Odighizuwa, and Quinnen Williams all in the middle. I mean, even Jalen Hurts was talking after the Cowboys upset the Eagles and being like, yeah, well, we're not surprised when we get five-man fronts now, given the way that they're now constructed on the interior. I mean, like, other teams are viewing it as they retooled, and you don't usually do that in just a couple of months after losing one of your best pass rushers. And then you look at the fact that the same way, and I've talked about this before, the Eagles look at Saquon Barkley and say, if we're going to pay a running back $20 million a year, well, we'd rather do that than pay the receiver $40 million a year. And I get that's a little bit skewed. The Eagles are still paying receivers. But in terms of what it means for that specific weapon, to pay a defensive tackle $26 million a year rather than paying an edge rusher $47 million a year, and then you start to have this impact, I mean, that is such a market inefficiency when you look at how much of a gap we now have between the salaries at the two positions. And the last thing I'll say is, I mean, Dak Prescott talked during the week last week, and he played Quinnen Williams as recently as like 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. And he said that for me as a quarterback, if I have an edge coming, well, I can try and escape. I can go one way or the other. But if someone's coming straight up the gut for me from that A gap, from that B gap, that's when it's really hard to avoid that. So you have the pass rush impact on that. And then you have the run defense impact when, I know we were talking about Saquon, but the carries he did get, he had 2.2 yards per carry against the Cowboys. And that was not necessarily what they were doing. So I think that when you look at George Pickens on the offensive side of the ball and the three defensive tackles the Cowboys have had after years of the run defense being their Achilles heel, I do think that this team has the pieces, if not to make it to the playoffs next year, then to do something next year.
It's a very interesting situation the Cowboys are in. We'll see if three defensive tackles and five defensive linemen work against Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't know, but I think that just the Thanksgiving games, by the way, are really interesting. First, you got the Lions Packers, which is a great game in the NFC North, but that second game, as Andrew kind of alluded to, these teams are, they need this win because the Chiefs, we've talked about their playoff stuff a lot, but the Cowboys now, everybody's like, wow, the Cowboys, can they make some kind of a push here? Can they get, well, if you lose to the Chiefs at home, you're back to 5-6-1, and you still have a lot of tough games coming up. So no, not really. I hate to do that and be like, oh, you have to beat the Eagles to prove your legitimacy. And then you beat the Eagles and you say, oh, well, not beat the Chiefs again too. But that's kind of the situation the Cowboys put themselves in by getting in this hole. I don't know that they're great yet. I'm willing to give the benefit of doubt, say they're better, obviously, with Quinnen Williams, but you should be better if you trade a first and second round pick for a guy. Like, he should make an impact, and he has. He's been very good. I am very interested, though, to see if this carries over to the Chiefs game. Can they play this kind of defense and do well against the Chiefs? Can they beat the Chiefs to get back, to become a legitimate playoff conversation? Like, it's not now. They're 5-5-1, and they're underdogs on Thursday. Like, this is not a legitimate playoff conversation yet, but if you do beat the Chiefs, well, okay. My mind will be open a little bit more. So they're fascinating, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and when I said they're walking around feeling good about themselves, I guess, you know, Jory, you have a great little anecdote at the end of your piece where you said, hey, Dak Prescott didn't want to say how big this win was in the overall scheme of his career, but he kept the jersey. Doesn't do that very often. Like, there is a, as you said, retooling with the defense, somewhat of a validation here that we do know what we're doing. And go back to the Bengals, right? Last year, or even this year. or the Ravens at the beginning part of the season. You could score all the points you want, but if you can't stop anybody, it doesn't matter. But there is a formula to victory and a formula to the postseason. And maybe they started too late, of just having that middle-of-the-road defense. And that's what we had always said that the Bengals could survive with. Just get a middle-of-the-road defense. Well, the Cowboys have the offense to win with a middle-of-the-road defense. Their defense was not middle-of-the-road. It was in the gutter at the first 6 weeks of the season. Well, now they're kind of getting towards middle-of-the-road. And yeah, Frank, to your point, this is a major validation game for them if they find a way to win on Thanksgiving. All three of these games are really good. I mean, the NFC North game you just mentioned, this game in the middle of the afternoon, and then Joe Burrow coming back and going to Baltimore against a team that, as he said it today, we've played a million times. I mean, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, to me, as it relates to this year, we won't really have to guess whether the Cowboys are actually good, because right after the Eagles, they've got the Chiefs this week and the Lions. So we'll have our answers. They're going to be tested and battle tested in those situations. And oh, by the way, the Lions might be someone they're competing against for a wild card spot, and the Panthers lost. So I don't think they're there yet. I just think we'll be able to tell whether they're there. And I also think that if they can win some of these games, in terms of what it means for next year, when the Cowboys lost in the first round to the Green Bay Packers a couple of years ago, they were the only team to lose at home in the wild card that year. It didn't just impact them then. I legitimately think, and a lot of people who are in that building believe, that it kind of carried over. They had this hangover of, like, they were so shocked by how the Packers did that to them that they really, I mean, we thought, we saw what the Saints did to them. We saw what the Ravens and the Lions. There were teams the next year that seemed to still be beating up on the Cowboys because they hadn't really recovered. And so I think the flip can happen. And obviously we saw the Lions do this a couple years ago when they beat the Packers at the end of the season, is that you can take a late season run and use it to power your next season. So I don't think that the Cowboys are likely or even like average likely to make the playoffs this year. Like, their chances are really low by all of the metrics, but I think that they can build something that will say, hey, this Quinn and Williams trade, we can already tell what it's going to mean for next year.
I'm going to steal that, and I'm not making light of it. I'm going to steal average likely. They're not likely. They're not average likely. I'm going to steal that. I like that. And I agree with you 100%. So coming up, are the Cowboys in Frank's playoff projection? And if not, why does Frank hate the Cowboys? That's coming up next. All 14 spots from Frank on Inside Coverage. Holidays are about traditions. Welcome back to Inside Coverage. I love holiday traditions. You know, at my brother-in-law, at my brother's house, my sister-in-law's house, like our Thanksgiving, we go over early and she gets the turkey in the oven, wraps it in bacon, by the way. Not at all kosher, but it tastes delicious. Then you sit around, you watch the early games, you fall asleep during the late game. Anyway, there's also a tradition that we are building here on Inside Coverage, and that is the Tuesday tradition, holiday or not, of Frank's playoff predictions, his playoff projections, better said, all 14 spots. Are you ready for the big reveal? Okay, good. Yes. You both said yes. Okay. Jory and Frank were both nodding. So here we go with the NFC. Are the Cowboys, drum roll, the Cowboys are not in it. You have the 49ers at 7. The Packers at 6, the Seahawks at 5. Somebody has to win the NFC South. Frank's going to give it to the Buccaneers. The Lions at 3, the Eagles at 2, and the Rams of Los Angeles at 1. Jory, you get the first crack at it. What do you want to ask Frank?
Frank, I don't disagree with you that the Eagles are winning the NFC East and likely in that spot, but if this is how the playoff projections look, are the Eagles beating the 49ers in the wild card round? And to extend that question, which of these teams do you feel confident the Eagles would beat in the first round?
That is a good question. I think that,
yeah,
I think they would beat the 49ers. I do. I just don't believe in the 49ers defense, although Robert Saleh, the aforementioned, has done a great job coaching them up. They come out of nowhere with some great performances like they did on Monday night. But overall, that I just think that that defense in Philly, I would give Philly the edge there. I would actually give Philly the edge over the Packers, too. I just think the Packers have been so mundane all season since week two that I don't really trust them in a playoff scenario. They let bad teams hang around. They've lost to some bad teams like the Panthers at home. We saw the Panthers Monday night. That Panthers team is not good whatsoever. So I think if this holds, if the Eagles do play a wild card weekend, I do think that their most likely opponent, whoever it would be, they're going to beat them. I think that they're not a one and done football team in my mind, barring major injuries to Jalen Hurts or AJ Brown or whatever. I think the Eagles are clearly going to win the division, and I think they're going to get out of the wild card round, no matter who they're not going to face the Seahawks or Rams. So I think they're fine.
Here's my question, Frank. These NFC projections are 6 out of 7 spots. What the current NFC playoff standings are right now heading into Thanksgiving. The one difference here is the 3 seed. The Chicago Bears currently have the 3 seed. Will you change? First of all, you hate the Bears. Second of all, they're a touchdown dog on Black Friday. If they beat the Eagles, do you still next week keep them out of your playoff projection?
I don't think I would. I think that I've baked in the fact that I think the Bears might go 1-5 down the stretch. And so if they don't go 1-5 down the stretch, then yeah, we'd have to revisit that. But I think the Bears, who have not beaten a good team all season, are in for kind of a rude awakening when the schedule gets a little bit tougher. Don't you? Like, there's some tough games coming up for the Bears starting on Friday. But yes, if they go into Philly and they beat the Eagles, if they even compete against the Eagles, like the last time we saw the Bears take out a really, really good football team, they gave up 52 points to the Lions. Like, they really have not played well against good teams. They lost to the Ravens when Tyler Huntley was.
It was week two.
Like, I know they had such a soft schedule. They haven't played a good game since then. So they keep beating all these middling teams. Like, huzzah, that's great. But I know I'm not giving them the North. I think the Packers.
I think the Bears are going to run the table other than their most difficult opponent, the Browns.
The Browns, of course. The Browns are the one game I give the Bears. Like, and if the Browns beat the Bears, well, then we're just talking about maybe an 0-6 end for Chicago there. I'm just digging myself deeper. You wanted to bait me into talking bad about the Bears.
Of course, I'm doing it. That's all the segment is.
The Bears are still not on my playoff projection. They won't be. But yes, if miracles happen, if they pull the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team and beat the Eagles on Black Friday, I will give them the respect.
Wait, whoa. If an 8-3 team wins this game, this is not Lake Placid, okay?
No Mike Cirozzioni anywhere, yeah.
No, it's not, but I like chiding Bears fans. They're so nice to me. Like, look at this accountability. Andrew got Frank on the record saying that if the Bears beat the Eagles, he will put them in next week's playoff projections. Yeah. So just know that when you don't do that next week, we are going to remind Bears fans and everyone who listens to this show that you said one thing and did another.
I'll keep my word.
If the Bears think the other overriding Philly question
and get their first good win of the season, I will put them in a playoff projection.
I think the other overriding question here about the NFC is, let's say this holds, is anyone coming to L.A. to beat the Rams? The Rams firmly believe, and I've said this, I don't think it's a shocker, that if they had beaten the Eagles, if Stafford had gotten into the end zone in the snow in the divisional round, that they would have beaten the Commanders in the NFC Championship game at SoFi, and that they would have gone to New Orleans. And you saw what the Chiefs did against the Eagles pass rush, their pass rush, the Rams just as good, that they would have done the same. But it didn't happen. So if this holds, will the best team for my money right now in the NFL be able to protect home field?
There's one team, Andrew,
playoff time.
There's one team. There's a team. And 10 days ago, they lined up for a 61-yard field goal after the quarterback had thrown 4 interceptions to beat the Rams in L.A. So I'm not discounting the Seattle Seahawks at all. If I had direct line to the graphics people, I would have just had my playoff projections read NFC West number 1 seed, second place NFC
West 5 seed.
We've
got a group chat for that. Frank?
Yeah, I could actually do that. But I think the two best teams in the NFL play in the same division. And I think the Seattle Seahawks are fully live to beat the Rams, even in LA.
I said the same thing on both my TikTok and my InstaFace, at Andrew Siciliano, by the way. Well, actually, the TikTok is .Siciliano. But I think the Seahawks and Rams are going to play 3 times. Yes, I'm a grown man on TikTok. Don't look at me funny. All right, let's get to the AFC.
Do you do TikTok dances at all, Andrew?
I do not do the TikTok dances.
I
promise you. My niece, who lives on TikTok, would kill me if I tried to do a TikTok dance. I would.
I think that's what we should do. I'll hold accountability for the whole Bears. If they win, I'll put him in a playoff projection. We need to somehow, some way, get Andrew doing dances on TikTok. Me and Jory, we're going to figure this out before the next
I can't do a dance at a wedding. I'm not doing a dance on TikTok. All right, let's get the AFC up here.
You couldn't. Enough. Now you can. Well, this is growth mindset.
AFC, Frank has the Chiefs at 7. He has the Bills at 6. He has the Jaguars at 5, who would, if this holds, go to Baltimore to play on wildcard weekend. The Ravens at 4. The Colts at 3. The Broncos at 2. And the Patriots at 1. As this currently stands, the entire left column is what the current standings are. So Frank has no changes there. On the right, it goes currently Chargers, Jaguars, Bills. So he has the Chargers out and the Chiefs as that extra team in. Jory, go ahead.
Last year, we saw the Chiefs and the Bills enter the playoffs as the first and second seed in the AFC. They each went on to the AFC championship. I think it's that experience in part that powers our belief in their ability to make it to the playoffs this year. But who do you think will survive in the playoffs longer, the Bills or the Chiefs?
The Chiefs easily. At this point, I've lost all faith in the Bills, other than they have number 17 and he can perform miracles sometimes. That's my only faith in the Bills right now. That's it. Like, I don't look at that team week to week and say this is a team that can win a playoff game, other than, you know what, Josh Allen sometimes pops up and scores six touchdowns. Like, that is who he is. He can carry a team. Other than that, I had trouble even putting them in the playoff field, honestly. I looked at it and said, I guess I have to put them in because it's the Bills. It's because of Josh Allen. But I'm also knocking out the Chargers, who are really, really well coached. And honestly, other than their offensive line, probably a better team. I don't know what to do with the Bills right now. They are 3-4 teams since September. And it doesn't look good. Like, if you watch them, nothing looks good about their operations. So I think the answer to the question, who do I have more faith in making a playoff run? It's easily the Chiefs. No hesitation whatsoever. I still think the Chiefs are just as good as they were last year. I know that sounds foolish based on the records, like 6-5 versus 15-2, but it's just close games. That's all. Everything about the Chiefs is, I think, just as good. The quality of play, I don't think, is that far off of what they were last year. So I still think there is a possibility that we see the Chiefs in a Super Bowl. And I'm not predicting it necessarily, but I'm not ruling it out either.
Frank, serious question. Go ahead.
The Chiefs are not burnt ends, Frank is telling us.
Not burnt
Andrew
ends.
Andrew insists that they are.
Regardless of what you may have heard.
I have said that I regret that. I love burnt ends.
Nothing,
I mean, who doesn't?
Nothing of my idiotic takes I regret.
Well, no, I do regret it because I didn't necessarily mean it. It was just kind of performative. I did think, they're not going to win the division. And it turned into, they're cooked. Because you had just used, I think, I'm not blaming you. I think Frank or maybe Charles, somebody just used the word cooked to describe someone else. Or maybe it was the show before, and I said they were cooked, and yeah, whatever. Q39, by the way, my favorite burn ends in Kansas City. In all seriousness, when Frank, you did this, had the Bills announced their Brandon Cook signing yet? The wide receiver waived by the Saints. Funny business on a contract, shockingly. And then the Bills signed him. Joking aside, does that change anything for you?
Not at all. No, I still think Brandon Cooks is a reasonable NFL receiver, but sure. I don't. They need Archer. An alpha. They needed Keon Coleman to be a professional, and he just hasn't been. Like, that's what they needed this year.
But he wears great puffy coats.
Really, really lacking. Great puffy coats. Gets a great sale on him.
Amazing puffy coats. All right, another question here. You believe that despite their two injuries on the offensive line, and despite Drake May looking human, God forbid, looked like a second-year quarterback last week, but he won. You believe the Patriots will hold on to the number one seed in the American Football Conference?
Very, very tough call. I'm glad you brought that up because I was very close to putting the Broncos at the number one seed. As I've talked about many times, I feel like I'm on the hill saying the Broncos are better than everybody realizes. The Broncos are a good football team. Yes, their offense is not great. You know what? The defense is. Their head coach is. And I think the Broncos are the better team. But the Patriots schedule. That's what it is. The Patriots schedule, they caught a schedule that you're probably not going to see very often of the next 10 years in the NFL. And it doesn't mean the Patriots aren't a good football team. They are, but they've really caught breaks with the schedule. They'll continue to catch breaks with the schedule. It's just hard to find losses. It's hard to find losses with the Patriots. That's why it kind of defaulted to them being the number one seed, although I think they're a very vulnerable number one seed. I think that you look at the other six teams in the AFC bracket and you kind of say, yeah, I could really honestly see any of these teams winning in Foxborough, except maybe the Jaguars. I don't know about the Jaguars.
Except maybe the Jaguars, who will tell you that they did win in Foxborough how many ever years ago and that really should have been an interception, but alas, it was not. Go ahead, Jordan. Yeah.
The whistle blew.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I would agree with you that the Patriots schedule, which includes the Giants, the Jets, and the Dolphins, is not bad. But I also think that the Patriots are kind of hitting a bit of an injury bug. And so I'm curious if that will allow, okay, they've got the Giants next. Well, if you've got an injury bug and this Giants team seems to be on the cusp of a win every week and taking the Lions to overtime and all of that, maybe this is the week that they actually break through. And oh, by the way, they have a different defensive coordinator. So Drake May can't base it necessarily quite as deeply on what the film was showing. And then, okay, the Bills are coming. We know they beat the Bills once, but are the Bills going to allow them to do it again? The Ravens? Well, the Ravens aren't the team that they were when they were 1-5 and we were looking at the schedule. So I still think that they should be able to be one or two, but it is interesting that I don't think it's as sure as it felt a couple weeks ago.
I want to go on record right now.
Really will affect things.
Absolutely. And I kind of alluded to this yesterday. I want to go on record right now. I think Jameis Winston and I think those pass rushers against a banged up O-line for the Giants make that game next Monday, wrapping up a long, long, long football weekend with games on Thursday and Friday, and then rivalry week on Saturday in college football, and then obviously the full Sunday schedule. I think the Giants make that interesting. Jameis is their best thrower of the football. He is their best catcher of the football. He is their best open field runner right now. Jameis Winston, one man band. It's like first base Bugs Bunny, second base Bugs Bunny. That's Jameis with the Giants. He's going to play every position, and he makes that game interesting. Write it down. Jory's looking at me like,
hope so, because goodness, the NFL loves putting the Giants on primetime, don't they? 2-10 Giants, here you go. More primetime
for
you,
somebody,
please.
Frank, I heard someone complaining about that today. And let me just say this. And this was a legitimate problem here. This is not me complaining about the schedule. Last year, late in the season, and you saw for the first time a TNF game flexed, the Browns and the Bengals that got flexed out, and you put in the Chargers and the Broncos, right?
I believe it was, yeah.
Right. The NFL had trouble last year with all these standalone spots, the Black Friday games, the Saturday games in December on the network and on Peacock as well, and all this extra inventory, finding enough good games down the stretch that were truly meaningful to make it worth all the money that these networks or streamers paid for these standalone spots. So, yes, sometimes you got to put the Giants and the Patriots in a Week 13 Monday night game and just hope it works. Because there is only so much inventory here late in the year. You cannot guarantee that all these extra standalone games that make all 32 owners a lot of money are going to be great games. Because CBS and Fox, by the way, want good games on their networks as well on Sunday afternoons. They pay a lot of money as well. So everybody goes, hey, take that game out at 1 o'clock and put it in primetime. No, CBS and Fox go, excuse me. No, we have Nance and Romo and Tracy already on the way to that game. Tom Brady is already on his PJ on the way to that game with his clone dog. And that dog don't want to turn around. Okay?
That dog so, ain't having it. Yeah.
I want to meet the clone.
My only thing is with the scheduling like this, everybody in the world knew the Giants were going to stink this year. Everybody knew the Giants. This isn't one
it's
of those
New
like,
York.
Oh, the wheels fell off the Dolphins,
the
or this
market.
Team got hurt, or that team got hurt. We knew in April when this game was scheduled. We're like, come on, the Giants again, really? The Giants are gonna be terrible. And they are. There's no shock. The NFL should have known this. Come on.
But joking aside, it is a real problem that I had this conversation with a pretty senior member of the league office last year. It was a legitimate problem last year. And you do have to look at, well, do you expand the playoffs? Do you do this? Or do you forget about the expanding the playoffs? Do you make it so that division winners don't automatically get the bye? And I never thought that would change. I don't think it should change. I think winning your division, not a bye, or rather a home game, the opening weekend or divisional weekend, I think that should be the case. I don't want that to change. I think winning your division means something. But one of the ideas that you're throwing around to make these games late in the season more meaningful, to keep teams from benching all their starters, as Week 18 Andy Reid did a year ago, clearly, and putting Carson Wentz in Denver, is to say, hey, you got to play for something, right? We're not going to guarantee you a home game by winning your division. Anyway, conversation for later in the year. Let's do one more thing, however, before we go. Frank, you get to go first.
You know, I think about this a lot the past few Thanksgivings. It was 8, 9, 10 years ago when the constant drumbeat among everybody was, take the Thanksgiving game away from the Lions. They stink. They're not worth it anymore. And it was hard to argue, honestly. Like, the Lions have been a bad franchise for so long. And yes, seeing them get pummeled by Peyton Manning or whoever, the first game of Thanksgiving, was not fun. But I give credit to everybody involved, including NFL, for being patient with the Lions, and the Lions themselves for turning things around. Last year, we got a really, really good Bears-Lions game on Thanksgiving. And this year, the best matchup on Thanksgiving is Packers-Lions. The Lions have turned themselves into one of the marquee NFL franchises. And I just want to take a moment to kind of tip my cap to the Lions for making it interesting on Thanksgiving, for turning our franchise around. There's so many poverty franchises in the league who decade after decade can't turn things around. The Lions finally did. They now are a worthwhile host on Thanksgiving. We can't imagine Thanksgiving without this Lions team. That's actually one of the really good games of Week 13. And also to the NFL for not giving into pressure and saying, no, we're not taking this game away from the Lions. It's been here since 1934. We all grew up with the Lions being on Thanksgiving. Kudos to everybody, especially the Lions, for turning this thing around, making themselves a viable Thanksgiving team that we all want to watch.
Well, I'm with you. Neither Jory and I, however, Frank, remember 1934. Jory, your one more Maybe I do. Thing.
My one last thing is that as much as we were saying Joe Burrow should not return to play and that this was a risk he shouldn't take, I think the Bengals have a real chance to play spoilers for the playoffs for the Baltimore Ravens. The Steelers and the Ravens are pretty much going after this AFC North crown. The Steelers have already played the Bengals twice without Burrow, but now Burrow is playing the Ravens first this week and then again 2 weeks later. And there is a chance that a Cincinnati Bengals team with Joe Burrow is going to beat the Ravens and allow the Steelers that passage to the playoffs. So I still think the Ravens have the upper hand, but I felt much better about the Steelers or about the Ravens overtaking the Steelers when they didn't have to play Joe Burrow twice.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. My one more thing has to do with Joe Burrow. He's back and he's on the podium today. And he said, yeah, he is going to play on Thursday in Baltimore. And he was asked, why are you so excited not to be back, but to play on Thanksgiving? Like, what does it mean to you, Joe Burrow, man who has won an AFC championship and gone to a Super Bowl, to play on Thanksgiving? He gave a great answer.
I think just like a lot of kids, you grow up going through Thanksgiving, you have your meals with your family, and then you go and sit on the couch, and typically there's not a lot on, except football. Back in the day, it was Lions and somebody. You go watch Matthew Stafford throw for 300, 400 some yards with Calvin Johnson and probably lose the game, but it was fun to watch. You know, those are memories that you have, and so I kind of always wanted to be the person out there.
Such fond memories watching Matthew put up all these empty calorie yards because it was Thanksgiving and then lose. It sent that to a couple of members of the Rams organization today. And it was kind of like, hey, you know, you ever want to come to this side of town? You know, it worked for Matthew. So we're grateful for Joe Burrow being back. And we're grateful to each and every one of you for watching and listening to the show. And could we get Jory and Frank back on the screen? I know we're doing a show tomorrow, but I'm grateful to you guys and thankful for you guys as well.
Same here.
Frank,
We're thankful for you and how you've elevated inside coverage this year, Andrew.
Oh gosh, elevated. Oh please. No. But you're all very sweet. And Frank, thank you for letting us use you as the foil and give you grief sometimes, despite the fact you're putting in great work and doing the Lord's work doing these playoff projections. Jory, two great pieces as well. Read them about both Saquon and the Cowboys right now on Yahoo Sports NFL page. And my name is Andrew. We're going to be back Wednesday for another show. You know, we might even preview Thursday's games or preview Sunday's games. We'll do a preview show Wednesday. Why not? Why not? Then we'll fall asleep on the floor, a Thanksgiving tradition. For Jory and Frank, my name is Andrew. Thank you for listening to and watching Inside Coverage.